listening to Ecom Weekly, and we have this room every week at 1 o'clock. We try to bring different topics to help entrepreneurs and e-com online sellers really sort of bring your business to the next level. We never promise get rich quick, Lamborghinis and unicorns. You know, we're telling you the real McCoy, you know, how we got here, success, failure, more failure than success, but we tell it as it is. And if you hear anybody saying that they've just did it, you know, it was always, you know, bubble, you know, what's the term? Unicorns and bubble gum or whatever it is, run. It's not a true entrepreneur. Anyways, today we're going to be talking about something so important. It's going to be, I've got an expert here. He just logged in, Rich Goldstein. And we're going to be talking about protecting your product. So getting your product, doing competitive research, getting it launched, and all of a sudden you find out that you either don't have the right to it, somebody's got a trademark, it's already patented, and we're going to talk to you about how to go about protecting that. But before I get into that, I just want to let you to, know that this is a give to get environment. We want to share as much as we can. We are not pitching. And we ask you, if you come up to ask a question, not to pitch. We love hearing questions, so put your hand up. Since this is a recorded room, if you're not willing to be recorded, don't put your hand up. But we want people, we want that interaction, and please, by all means, engage with us. Also, if you love what you hear, make sure that you click the Startup Club greenhouse so you can get notifications up in the top left, and make sure that you follow the panelists. So I think I got everything, Jeff. Jeff's the expert at all.
I'll just add, Norm, thank you. I would just add that this Ecom Weekly show is part of Startup Club. And if you go to startup.club, our website for the club, you can find recordings of past episodes of Ecom Weekly and other great recurring shows that are on Startup Club. And you can also sign up for our mailing list so that you can be informed of special events, upcoming shows, and everything cool and new and interesting in Startup Club. So thank you for that. Thank you, Norm.
All right. So thanks, Jeff. Without any further, I told you guys, I just got back from a 3-week trip, business trip. So it was all no fun. Well, a little bit of fun. Anyways, I got to get my mind straight. And I think I got a little bit of a cold, but I want to introduce our expert panelist today, Rich Goldstein. He's a great friend of mine. I got to know him through events, actually, through a friend of a friend or through a friend. And we just have become great buddies. And this guy knows his stuff. So, Rich, welcome to the room.
Hey, Norm. So great to see you here. And I would say on that business trip, you did have quite a bit of fun. And I have the pictures to prove it. So
a little bit.
Yes, you could still write it off, but you did have quite a bit of fun, and I'm sure of that.
Okay, all right. So I guess I got to pay a couple of bucks not to publish those pictures, right?
Well, I'll just keep them, I'll keep them private for now.
Close to the chest.
Yeah, absolutely. Norm, I really appreciate you having me here today, and I appreciate all the kind words as well. And just one thing I want to note about Startup Club is I got onto Clubhouse in December, so I was kind of on the early adopter curve, let's say. And Startup Club was one of the first clubs that I encountered, and I was so impressed. I watched one of the pitch panel feedback sessions, and I was just really amazed by the quality of the feedback that was being given. And I promoted it to a lot of people. I told a lot of people that if you want to really see how business people approach a pitch and how they hear things that you might say when you're pitching your product, pitching your venture, then check out that feedback session that the Startup Club is doing. So I've been a big fan of Startup Club since my beginning of Clubhouse, and I just wanted to say that as well.
Oh, yeah, and that's great. You actually, right from the beginning, you came out, you were telling people people don't realize, sellers don't realize, entrepreneurs a lot of the times don't realize how important it is to protect your IP and not to do it on the cheap. Like there's we've had actually I think it was one of the first times we sat down and we were talking about a trademark I was trying to go under or one that I was suspicious about. And you were explaining to me, you know, this is an area that you just don't go, oh, I'm going to go to whatever.com, legal.com and file my own trademark. So can we start with trademarks? Because I think that's probably the simplest. Why should somebody patent or create a trademark? And how easy is it to do?
Okay, absolutely. And so I want to touch on what you said there about doing it on the cheap.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is it's a bit symptomatic of having the wrong focus. So like it's not even strictly about doing it on the cheap. It's about having a focus on the wrong thing. And I'll just give you an example of that. A lot of ventures will say, well, we want to get IP. We want to get some patents. And we have these four innovations in our SaaS that we want to get patents for. So let's budget to apply for a patent for these four different ideas, these four different concepts. And then like what happens then is that maybe they begin to shop around for different firms and maybe they're shopping by price and go for getting it done on the cheap, as you suggest. But what happens then is their attention is in the wrong place. Their attention is, let's get these four patent applications done or two trademark applications, for example, where their attention really should be on, let's figure out what we ought to be protecting. Let's figure out what IP strategy we ought to take forward. And I've seen a lot of companies, a lot of venture-backed startups put money towards IP, apply for those four patents. And then when I got into the picture and I looked at it, I said, you know, these four patents you applied for weren't really the right direction to go. There were these two others that you should have done. And so it's like, doing it on the cheap is, I think, part of a bit of the wrong direction to take it, which is to not look at strategy first. So I'm a big proponent of figuring out the strategy first, figure out the why, and figure out how the IP you get could serve that why. So just wanted to say that. Now, now going to the meat of your question about trademarks. So the reason you would want to get trademarks is to protect your branding, to protect the things that differentiate your company from other companies out there in the marketplace. And when I say differentiate, what I mean in particular is the impression on the consumer. So when consumers see your branding, when they see aspects of your company that have them think of your company and your company alone, those branding aspects can often be protected by a trademark. And that could be the name of the company. It could be the name of a product. It could be the logo that you use to represent your company. It could be a slogan that you use. And those different elements that when people see them, they think of your company, those are the things that you typically want to get a trademark for. Applying for a trademark is relatively simple, but it's highly nuanced. And what I mean by that is the trademark application itself maybe takes 15 minutes to do. But knowing what you want to say in that trademark application, knowing how you want to differentiate your product from others that are out there in terms of the type of product or services that you're applying for, and even picking which of the elements of your branding that you want to apply for, that's a matter of strategy. And that's where cheaping out doesn't pay. It's kind of like, you know, you can go to one of those services like LegalZoom and say, file this trademark application for me. And they can do an okay job of doing that. And probably 60% of the time, they won't mess anything up. But two things. First is, was that even the right trademark that you should have been applying for? And then the other thing is, well, you know, the other percentage of the time that something does get messed up, either resulting in a rejection or resulting in a problem down the road where, you know, 3 years down the road, you did get a trademark, but now there's an issue with a competitor that could have been a non-issue if the trademark was handled with the right strategy. So I guess those are the considerations in doing it on the cheap and what it takes to actually apply for a trademark.
One of the things that I do whenever I'm either looking at launching a new brand or launching a company, I'll do my initial research. So I do it myself. I'll go and I'll check out the competitors. I'll try to figure out a name. And then I will go over, one of my first moves is to go over to the USPTO.gov site and just do a quick name search, which is free on TESS, T-E-S-S. That's the government database. And Rich, correct me if I'm wrong. This is a very simplistic old guy trying to figure things out. But anyways, this is what I do. And so then after I do that, I also go over to, I think it's called Name. I'm just checking this out on my computer. It's Name Check. And Name Check spelled Name C-K, I believe, or C-H-K. It shows you anything that's open on the social media platforms. Once I get to that point is probably when I'm going to call you or an IP attorney. And, you know, there is a difference. There is a huge difference because just recently I had a trademark that I tried with a attorney that was just, he didn't specialize in IP. Well, guess what? It didn't get rejected, but there were people coming back on me because I guess the definition of the class or the classes I was trying to file for weren't correct, almost just like what you were talking about. And they had no idea. They thought they were doing me a favor. I thought, okay, well, you know, let's give it a shot. But from now on, forever, I'm not going to go with, you know, somebody who practices law, you know, or just practices law. I'm going to a specific IP attorney. So, you know, I learned my lesson that way. So any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, first of all, any attorney can file a trademark application. And so sure. If you ask your contract attorney, can you file a trademark? They'll say, sure, I'll file it for you. And maybe they filed a few before. The difference is that a IP attorney who specializes in trademarks, for example, has probably filed thousands. And a lot of times that experience comes into play in how they approach the application, how they counsel you with regard to what can get through and what's going to be a big problem getting through the trademark office. So it's, as I said, trademarks, it tends to be fairly nuanced. It's like little difference can, or just a little piece of knowledge, a little piece of experience with maybe something previous that's similar in the fact pattern can make a big difference in how an IP attorney approaches it. So, I think it's extremely worthwhile to have an IP attorney work on your IP essentially. And so just going back to what you were saying before about your initial searching, that all sounds great. I mean, that sounds like a great thing to do. Do some homework first. The thing about self-searching is it's not terribly difficult to find other marks that are similar to use those search tools. The things that you want to be aware of, though, is that you're not necessarily going to know what you're looking at, and you're not necessarily going to know if, for example, like you find a mark that's very similar to yours, does that prevent you from doing it or not? Because like there's some odd concepts in trademarks. Like one concept, so check this out. So it's like if you've got a mark, you've got a name for a product, and someone has a very similar name already registered, then that could be an issue, obviously, because that could cause consumer confusion and prevent you from getting your own trademark. It could mean that the other person has an opportunity to go after you for confusing their customers. So finding one that's similar to yours in the same field can be a problem. But if you find two, then that actually, it points in the other direction. That tends to show that maybe there isn't a problem. Because it's like if there are two or three or a bunch of other people that have similar marks to what you're seeking to pursue, then that tends to show that the public isn't thinking about any one of them in particular. It would be hard for any one of them to say, well, yeah, if you were able to get your trademark, if you were able to launch your product in this name, our customers would think that we're you, and like they would get confused and they would end up buying from you instead. It's hard for them to say that if there are actually several other people that have that item or that have that type of mark. And what that points to is something called distinctiveness. It's like how distinctive your mark is, how much it sets your brand apart from other brands is the extent to which it's trademarkable. But my point here is simply this, Norm. It's just that a lot of times when you're looking at your search results, you might not necessarily know if they're good or bad, right? And another thing that comes out of a professional search often that doesn't necessarily out of most amateur searches is knowing what types of alternatives to look for. Like look for other spellings, for example, other words that sound alike, kind of like homonyms. Because under trademark law, if a mark is spelled differently, but it sounds the same, it's still probably a conflict. So there's just things like that to have in mind. But I think your approach of doing some homework ahead of time is great. And I think it's really helpful. Like to me as an attorney, when my clients come to me having already done some homework.
You mean I'm doing something right?
You know, sometimes we get things right, yes. You know, by chance or yeah, you're doing a lot right, Norm. That's right. For sure.
So the other thing about this is a trademark is not a trademark is not a trademark. There's different types of marks out there. Can we get into that?
Yes, but okay, like I think I know what you're getting at here. Is that like, for example, there's like a logo mark?
Yeah,
design mark, word mark. Okay, yes. Absolutely. So here's the thing. If you have a brand name, and so this is a distinct name for a product in your field, then usually the first angle of approach is to get a word mark registered. So the word mark is then for that name, regardless of how it's presented. So regardless of whether it's presented in a fancy font or in plain text or what have you, or in other words, it's separate from the notion of the design or the logo. Like you could have your name embodied in a logo that's also distinctive, but that's usually not your first angle of attack. Typically it is to apply for the word mark to protect that name, so that it prevents other companies from using a mark that's confusingly similar. Again, regardless of what style or presentation, it's about the name itself. And then, you know, often the second angle of attack is to go toward the design elements, protecting, for example, the logo. So the logo mark is helpful to prevent other people from using a logo that looks like yours, even if it's a different word. So if it's a different word, but it's presented in a similar color scheme, similar style, such that it could confuse the public, then that's, that could be a trademark infringement. I think an example of mine, and I'm going to date myself here significantly, and anyone who's from New York will know what I'm talking about. So going back to Canal Street in the 80s, Canal Street in New York City in the 80s was a big flea market. There was all kinds of knockoff products there. And I remember seeing a set of headphones that they look like Sony Walkman headphones, but it didn't say Sony. It said Kobe. And it was the same writing style as Sony, like big, wide block letters, C-O-B-Y. And, you know, at first glance, that really looked like Sony. And so that's an example of when a logo mark or a design mark would be helpful to you. It's like if you have... if you have a competitor not actually copying your name or the name of your product, but they're copying the way that it's presented such that it would confuse the public, then that's a good candidate for a design mark or a logo mark. And I think, are those the types of registrations you were referring to?
Yeah, absolutely. Great. So, and Rich, for our Amazon listeners, which I see a bunch here, and they probably already know, but if you're new to Amazon and they talk about brand registry, is there any specific trademark that Amazon's looking for?
Yeah, I mean, they are looking for the word mark. I mean, because the word mark is what says that this brand name is registered for you. There's many reasons why it's possible to get a design mark even when the word mark is not possible to obtain. So like naturally, and I'll give an example of this to clarify that in a moment, but so naturally, Amazon doesn't favor you doing a design mark or logo mark. I've heard of people getting their their brand registry with a logo mark. It doesn't make sense to me that they could. And by and large, though, I've heard people rejected for if they try to submit a design mark for brand registry. And so, but here's the thing. Here's the principle. It's kind of like one thing you can't usually trademark is a descriptive name. So like imagine like, you know, you're selling red licorice and you want to call it red licorice. You can't protect that because it's descriptive or maybe even generic of the product. But if you have a really cool logo for red licorice, you can get a design mark or a logo mark for that, red licorice with this design. And the trademark office would allow you to do that. And typically what they have you do is something called a disclaimer, which means you admit that you're not trying to prevent people from using the words red licorice other than at part of this really cool looking design logo that you have. If let's say you were selling on Amazon and you tried to go for brand registry and you're trying to stop other people essentially from using the words red licorice, Amazon doesn't want to give you that right, and they shouldn't. And rightfully, that's the reason you were only able to get the design mark and not the word mark, is the same reason why they shouldn't allow you to have brand registry for it, because you really should not have the ability to stop people from using that phrase. So Amazon will be looking for the word mark to see that the trademark office actually said, yes, this is a distinctive name for you, and you have the right to exclude other people from using this name in the context of your type of product or service. So that's how that plays out.
Yeah, I don't usually reach out to the audience about this. Usually they'll raise their hands if they want to have questions, but I see a bunch of Amazon sellers here. And if you're not an Amazon seller, the reason why I'm asking this is to get all the little bells and whistles that Amazon wants to provide you. They want to have this thing called brand registry, which means you need to have a trademark. So I'm looking at all these people: Roslyn, Yanni, Rad, Ankit, Marsha, Joe, Neri. Most of these people I met in Vegas, by the way, you did too. So that's another reason why we have to reach out there and network, because you get to meet great people. But do you guys have any questions? Have you got any stories about, you know, things that have happened while you were trying to register with brand registry or trying to get a trademark? I'm just curious. So if you do, just put your hand up and we'll get you up on stage. Oh, Neri, of course. There you go. So Neri's coming up.
Hi, guys. Sorry to see you guys. I have a quick question. So my brand name is brand registered, like ABC brand. And it's filed as Word, Mark, whatever you just call it. And I realized later that it's all uppercase. And I talked to Yale and she said, it's all uppercase. It's okay. My brand name is represented in brand registry. As like, because right now I've been just habitually using A as uppercase, B, C, D as a lowercase. But then one case where Amazon sent me like, hey, these are not matching your brand name. And I'm like, no, it's matching. But then I realized actual trademark is showing up as all uppercase. And Yale said that that's okay, that I don't have to go try to fix it. Is that correct? Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, the most typical way that trademarks are presented is all uppercase. I mean, if you're seeking to do it in some other pattern, like that's secondary, almost the way in which you would register a logo. It's like then you're going for the stylization of it. But all uppercase will typically be sufficient.
So it's okay when I use my brand name, mm-hmm. and it's I've been using just one uppercase and the rest is a lowercase, and that's okay. That's not matching the brand, like trademark.
Yeah, no, that's not you know, that's not an issue in itself. Like it's not an issue with it not matching. And I think the bigger thing you want to be concerned about is whether other people, if they changed the way in which they presented it with different combinations of upper and lowercase, would they be able to avoid your trademark? And the answer is almost definitely not, because the standard is likelihood of confusion, and people would be confused between the two, whether your mark is registered in all uppercase and then they present it as all lowercase. That doesn't make much difference. So yeah, you're okay. The short answer is you're okay, and the larger answer is Yael is correct too, and she's a fine trademark attorney.
Rich, this is Jeffrey up in the corner. Question related, I think. What about a space between two words? If you have a two-word name that you want to trademark, and when you use it as your domain name, for example, there's no space between the two words, but when you use it outside of that, you might have that space. Does it matter if you trademark it with or without the space between the two words?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. And it's a different issue that creates. It's called a specimen issue. So when you apply for the trademark, they want to see an example of how you use that name out there in public, how to use it in commerce. And that example needs to match how you applied for it. So it's like if, for example, you apply for it as a single combined word, but yet you are presenting it on your website, et cetera, as two words, then you'll get a rejection for the specimen not matching. So you want to apply for it exactly as you use it. So there's that. But then the other side of it is, then competitors, whether they, you know, they do the same thing as yours, but they don't put the space in, or they do put the space in, or they hyphenate, that usually will not get them out of trouble with you for trademark infringement. So, but what you want to do is you want to, when you're applying for it, you want your specimens to match how you're applying for the mark. And so for that reason, make sure it's consistent.
So Rich, and I know this is all logical, what you're talking about. Amazon is not logical. I've seen, and I'm working this out with a client right now, where they have something, they have their brand all in uppercase. Sorry, it's all in lowercase. They have it on Amazon as uppercase. And then they've just messed up. They've got three different versions of it. And Amazon has put a hold and a suspension on their list. It's not a suspension. Yes, so it is. It was a suspension or a suppression of the listing. And so I know what you say makes complete sense, but depending on who you're talking to or the algorithm at Amazon, you could run into some problems. It's just my experience that I've seen, but I just wanted to bring that to everybody's attention. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, when it comes to like terms of service issues or just issues with Amazon, like, you know, I'm not an expert on that, and I can't tell you exactly what would kind of cause a problem with Amazon or not. But it's just as a matter of trademark law, they're equivalent. They're as close to equivalent as they need to be for practical purposes. But you know, it's like that. It's again, it's one of the reasons why people apply for multiple trademarks. Is there is some additional angle of protection when you have, like, say, a stylized version, even though you already have the word mark version, let's say in all caps, it might provide some additional benefit to you. But yes, I can't comment on how it plays out in the Amazon arena. But as far as trademark law, yeah, they're equivalent, and the example she gave, I don't see any issue there.
Right. Okay. Super. Let me see. I'm just going to reset the room. Today you're listening to our weekly podcast, Ecom Weekly. Today we're talking about how to protect your product. There's nothing like doing all your homework and then finding out that you don't have the trademark or something comes up. We're going to get into that in the second half of the room today. But also, if you like what you're hearing, and Rich is just, he's incredible, just tons of knowledge here. If you like what you're hearing, make sure you follow Rich or any of the panelists today. If you like and you want to hear more about Startup Club, they've got some great rooms. We're just lucky to be part of the club. Hit that greenhouse up top and you'll get notifications from them. So, Marcia Rees, I just met you in Vegas for the first time.
Hi, Norm. That was the highlight of my trip, was meeting you. Seriously, I had no idea you were so tall and such a nice person.
Well, thank
but
you.
Anyway, I, as Norm knows, the MGM Grand in Las Vegas has 27 or 8 properties, and they have a floor in each property called the Staywell floor. We have a registered trademark for Staywell Copper, and their trademark is Stay, and then it has two little half circles in between, an icon, and then the word Well. And our trademark is capital S, Stay, capital Well, a capital W, Well, with no space in between. Now, I would like to actually talk to the MGM Grand about using our product as a premium promotion or an ad specialty to their guests who stay on the Staywell floors. But I see they're showing their trademark registered, and I know ours is. Rich, what should I be aware of before I approach them? Because I don't want to get into a legal battle with the MGM Grand.
Okay, absolutely. Very interesting. And so first, I guess this requires a little disclaimer that this is not legal advice, that this is really, we're just seeking to hash out some of these scenarios and from an educational standpoint to really kind of see like what some of the issues might be. But really, like, you know, before you know, you're expressing like you are concerned, you don't want to get yourself into a litigation. You want to make sure that like the advice that you actually take is from someone who really understands all of the facts and circumstances. They've taken a deep dive into the situation enough so that they can give you the right answer of what to, you know, of what you ought to do. So just don't take this as what you ought to do, but let's just look at a few pieces of it, okay?
Great, thank you. And I have not called my trademark attorney yet. I've been swamped since getting back from Vegas.
Okay, cool. So a couple of principles here. Like one is that trademarks are specific to the type of product or service that you have registered. So it's like if you have stay, regardless of the spelling or the spacing or the hyphenation, it's like if you have stay well for copper products, that doesn't preclude them from coexisting with the trademark of stay well having to do with, let's say, hospitality services. And, you know, often in determining whether someone can have those, whether two different entities can have that same mark in different fields, the question is, well, would people tend to be confused between the two? Would people that, like, see your products, for example, think that it's affiliated with MGM or vice versa? So, like, if there's no likelihood of confusion, often products can coexist in very different fields. And, you know, that's why there's only 50,000 words in the English language, but there's millions of trademarks. And part of that is because there are marks that are being used by different companies in very different fields, and that's okay. So there's that principle there. Another issue that occurs to me is, you know, having them carry your products might only add to the confusion, because if you've got Staywell products in the Staywell suite, then people might tend to think that they must be products from MGM or when they see your products again, think that, oh, this must be MGM selling their products in a different forum. So, you know, having a cooperative deal with MGM might cause some trademark issues in itself. But, you know, again, something that probably needs a deeper dive and to figure out also, like, there's third parties. If there are other Staywells out there in other types of, in other fields, that could sway things in a certain direction. So you really need to get the whole picture before you know, taking action, or even like knowing whether theirs is a potential conflict. And I get that you don't want to get yourself into a litigation, and so you don't want to kind of put it in a situation, or you don't want to create a situation that leads to one either. So definitely want to get some good advice there. And I would say not just from any old trademark attorney, but from an IP litigator.
You know, that's very good advice, Rich. Thank you. And I'm not positive. I wouldn't want to be.
Not advice.
I'm sorry. Very good comment. I also wanted to offer to the group, in my experience, I have been very successful in defending my trademark and patents on Amazon, on Walmart.com, on Wish.com, and there's one more. But I have not had good success defending my intellectual property on eBay. They don't seem to care. And I just wanted to see what the group had to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say it kind of depends on the IP policy. There are complicated issues when it comes to IP. And I mean, I've noticed with Amazon that they tend to take the side of the IP owner. Often to a fault, and often where they shut down listings that really shouldn't be shut down. They kind of shoot first and ask questions later. You know, it's a difficult thing for them dealing with millions of different listings to try and figure out IP rights violation, especially doing it with a very large team that deals with such issues, and to do it consistently. And so I'm just not surprised that other platforms like have different slants in terms of being maybe more slanted towards not taking action for IP violations or potential IP violations. So that's just my take on it.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you, Marcia, for the question. And here's Roz. I just met her in Miami.
Yes, you did. So when you say you didn't have any fun on that trip, I had a lovely day that day with you.
It was a lot of fun.
It was a great day. So I have a couple of things here. The first thing is, Rich, as an attorney also, I practice in the area of family law. I do some federal ADA Title III defense work. Some other things. I am the first person to recommend to anyone who wants some IP protection, hire an IP specialist. I went to law school with one of the Amazon IP accelerator people. His name is Michael Chesel. And even though I looked up the name that I wanted for my company, for my wordmark myself, and I registered as an attorney on the USPTO's website. When I looked at the application, and to use your word, I reviewed all the nuances, I thought, I just don't want to get involved with this, because for a few hundred dollars, what I don't know and what I could be doing wrong, and this is what I tell my clients, it's not worth it to take that chance. So hire somebody who knows what they're doing. And I just find that's the best way to go. So
absolutely.
I'm on your side here.
Absolutely. And I'm on your side because, like, if, you know, people ask me sometimes about a divorce situation and what have you, and I'm like, you know, I know some of the big concepts, but often the situation is ruled by the not Well, the situation is determined not necessarily by the big rule, but by the exception to the rule, or by the exception to the exception to the rule. And so it's like you need to know things to that depth to know when it seems to be pointing towards this answer, but oh, now with this one additional fact, it points in a totally different direction. So I absolutely agree. And you know, it's with trademarks to some extent, it can be somewhat critical of having help with an IP by a high IP specialist. But when it comes to patents, which we haven't really talked about here today, patents, it's absolutely essential. I mean, do not take any advice from someone who isn't an expert in patents, like a non-patent attorney. Even an IP attorney that doesn't that isn't a patent attorney, you shouldn't listen to when it comes to patents, because it is extremely specialized information. And again, I just want to go back to the first thing I said, where the most important thing here is strategy. And very often, having enough, being able to zoom out and take a 10,000 foot view of a situation will allow you to take the right strategic approach. So even if someone seems to know the rules and much of the concepts, it's like being able to know where those nuances are can give you the ability, especially in a patent situation, of steering it towards spending a lot of money and needlessly and not. So there's that.
Well, here's my question. So I am initially selling on Amazon in a certain category, and that's the class that the word I have a word mark and a logo that I'm asking Michael to trademark, but I'm also planning to do some other products all within like a unified theme. And one of them in particular, I might want a patent. I specifically chose him, like you said, because he does do patents. And then along with that particular product, I have a unique advertising sort of theme to present the product. Would I also, or how do I ask this? This is a question for you and Norm, I guess. So my first question is, for Amazon, would I be better off to initially trademark both those classes of products? And then would I also be looking for a trademark on the specific advertising copy? Or does that have nothing to do with it?
Yeah, you wouldn't typically trademark advertising copy. I mean, a short phrase can sometimes be trademarked, but not copy.
Would I copyright it?
It would be copyright, protected by copyright.
Okay.
Yes.
But it would be in some way, there is some IP protection for it. Because I think it has the potential to be good and to be susceptible to a lot of people wanting to copy it.
Yeah. Yes, probably. And so that's copyright is the appropriate way that you protect content. Branding
okay.
with a trademark and product differentiation, product ideas, product design, that's patents. But now, if you are going to be selling the products, the two different products with that brand name, so you'd probably want to apply with two categories. But question is, are you selling both of them currently, or is one current and one prospective?
Neither one is current. One is about to be current, and the other one is prospective. So I could.
How far prospective? Like 2 months, 6 months?
Oh, at least, yes.
Okay, well, here's the thing, here's a consideration. In order to get a trademark fully registered, you need to actually be using it. In other words, selling products under that name.
Mm-hmm.
So you could apply for a trademark on that basis called actual use, where you're actually using the
yes.
product. You could apply for it as an intent to use when you're
right.
planning to start using it.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is it goes through the process. The trademark examiner reviews it. If they approve it, then it gets then you get what's called a notice of allowance.
Mm-hmm.
You then need to supply proof that you're using the mark. You need to supply specimens that show how you're actually using
mm-hmm.
it. So the reason I ask about the time frame is because if, for example, you apply on the both in the same application, and then in 6 months you're in the position to supply that proof so that you get the trademark registered, but you're only selling one of them, then you're going to hold up the application until you're selling that second one.
Okay.
So, if they're very different time frames, you might want to apply for them separately.
Okay.
Two categories, but you know, put them in two different applications so that one could actually go fully through and get registered, while the other one you could have on hold for a little bit.
And then if I'm going to set up an advertising campaign, I would tell him about it so he could figure out the copyright application or however that goes.
Yes, likely. Okay. That's how you could do it. Copyright is tricky, and I think it's beyond the scope of getting into it in depth here. But yes, you could.
Okay.
You could file the text as and get a registered copyright for that.
Okay. Thanks so much. I'm Roz, and I'm done.
Yeah. Thanks, Rosalind.
Thanks, Roz. Okay, so Rich, we're going to be cutting this off within the next 15 minutes. Just wanted to get, and you know what? I was crazy to think that we were going to get through trademarks and patents today. I'd love to have you back on in another room talking about patents, because we could go forever on that as well. Mm-hmm. I do want to mention that, and again, this is... I don't want to pitch anything, but you have, and I've read your book that you, I think that you published a few years back, and it was incredible. Like, and this was on patents, but it gives you an incredible understanding of patents. We haven't touched on patents, but I do want people, if they're, you know, interested in trademarks and patents, to be able to get that book. So do you, can you give us your contact information on how to download it or, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's actually really simple. And thank you for mentioning that. And thank you for the kind words about the book, too. So I've actually made it available to all of my Clubhouse friends over here, where you can get a free copy of it. I mean, basically, I buy a copy on Amazon and send it to you. But I'm happy to send it to anyone who wants it. And it's really easy. I mean, there's two ways. One is go through my profile. The other is if you're in front of a computer with a web browser, you just type in patenting.club. And then there's a bunch of options there, which include, like, fill out a form to get a free copy of my book. And then the other way to do that is just to click my profile and then scroll down to my Instagram. And then the link in my bio brings you to that same page, like patenting.club, where if you want to submit a form and just get a copy of my book, happy to send it to you. And so that's how they can get a copy of my book. But I appreciate you bringing that up, Norm. Thank you.
Hey, no problem. Much. And you know,
and I'm happy to come back and talk in more in depth about patents. If we want to scratch the surface now, I'm open to it.
I don't even want to start that, because it would be another at least hour, even if we just scratch the surface. But I do want to ask you, and we may have touched on this, but mistakes. What are the absolute do not do, you know, when you want to start this process?
Okay. On the patent side, the major mistake is to launch the product before you apply for a patent. And that's the biggest mistake that people unknowingly make, is by launching the product without having applied for the patent, you immediately lose the rights in most of the world to ever apply for a patent, and people don't know that. And in the U.S., there's technically still a one-year grace period. And so if you file that application within a year, then under the right circumstances, you will not be stopped out from getting a patent. But a lot of people, without knowing that grace period is a year, they come to me a year and a half down the road and say, I've got this product, I'm selling, you know, $6 million worth per year. I've just got to protect it. And I ask them how long that they've been selling it, and they tell me a year and a half. And I have to tell them that as much as I'd love to do this project for them, and clearly they could afford to pay for it, we just can't do it. It's too late. And their answer is always the same. It's like, well, how could I have known that? And that's why whenever I get a chance to speak to entrepreneurs, it's always something that I bring up, because now you know. And just the one little caveat I want to add to that is I'm not saying that every product should be patented or you should apply for a patent on every product. I actually advocate being very judicious about what products you apply for. It's not necessarily the first product that you launch that you should be applying for a patent for. Maybe it's the third or the fourth that really is worthy. And sometimes if you apply for a patent on the first one and it really wasn't a good candidate, it's not going to work out very well. And then and then maybe when you get to that third product that really is a good candidate, you'll feel kind of burned and you won't do it. And so what I recommend is not that you apply for a patent before you launch the product, but that you do some real due diligence and you seriously consider whether you should be applying for a patent before you launch. That's what you need to do, is figure it out before you launch. And if you're not going to apply for a patent, then fine. Then just move forward full steam ahead with your marketing efforts, get that product out there, and don't look back with regard to the patenting. But I think that's the biggest advice. And then let's see, as far as do's and don'ts, or don'ts, I mean, there's some misconceptions that people have about this stuff. And one of them is, you know, copying other people's images, copying other people's text, under the mistaken belief that if you give them credit, then that gets you out of trouble for copyright infringement. It doesn't. You can't just appropriate something and then give them credit as an excuse. As a matter of fact, giving them credit gives an easy way for them to Google and find that you've copied their content. So that's another don't that comes to mind.
All right, great. So promise anybody who's listening right now, we're going to have Rich back and we're going to get right into patents. But get the book. You'll never hear me talking about, or very seldom you'll hear me saying, you got to get this book. But if I can take something complicated and read it and it's simplified, oh my gosh, it's so great. And this book is like that. So Rich, congratulations on that book. I know I've told you a million times about it, but it really helped me understand patents. All right, guys. So, or everybody, just wanted to say we are going to break a little early today. Let's see, if you like what you heard, please hit the green house up at Startup Club. If you like the panelists today, please follow Rich. He's incredible. And I'm umming and ahhing right now because my battery is about to go on my phone and I'm nowhere near somewhere I can plug it in. So hopefully if I cut off, we'll see you later. But anyways, this on Thursdays at 1 o'clock, join us, Ecom Weekly. We have current topics for entrepreneurs and how to become a better online seller. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks. I'm seeing that we're having an ongoing, like I'm recognizing people that are listening. So thank you so much for being part of our community. And if you have any topics, make sure you get in touch with me that you'd like to hear. So thank you.